locally, regionally, and internationally. And, you know, whatever part of the world you are, whether it is day or whether it is night, welcome and thank you very much for joining us on Marathon Fridays. And as usual, with me this afternoon is my co-host, my very competent co-host, Ms. Adi and Seju. Good afternoon, Adi.
Good afternoon, Garth, and to all our listeners on this very, well, warm outside, but cold on the inside, Friday afternoon.
Yes, and as advertised, today we will be dealing with the security of our economy, or economic security of Trinidad and Tobago, and to discuss this issue and perhaps debate this very important issue, we have in studio with us the Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Senator Mariano Brown, and former independent senator and economist, Ms. Mary King. And joining us on the phone a little bit after 1 p.m. will be well-known trade unionist and political economist, Mr. David Abdullah. Lady and gentlemen, Minister, former Senator, good afternoon and a very warm welcome to you both again, and very glad that you made it, and thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
There's a very serious threat, according to the governor of the central bank, about double-digit inflation becoming an endemic, so that the global food crisis threatens price stability and all governments are scared about double-digit inflation. Why is double-digit inflation, Mr. Minister, such a frightening thing?
Well, inflation by its very nature can be good and can be bad. I think, generally speaking, inflation below the order of 5% is deemed to be helpful in terms of stimulating certain areas. But inflation that is double-digit has the tendency to, one, devalue the growth, certainly undermine the incomes of those of us who are on fixed incomes, and also to create some disequilibrium situations. So from that perspective, one always wants to keep inflation at a reasonable level. Mm-hmm. And that reasonable level is deemed to be under 10. On a long-term basis, it is projected that most economies will have some level of inflation, and a normal level of inflation is said to be somewhere between 2.5 and 4%.
Do you agree with the governor's projections for our inflation rate?
I didn't think that he projected. He warned that if certain steps were not taken, that we would have a difficult time and we could be facing double-digit inflation. The last time we were in this position, inflation had risen to approximately 10%, and a number of measures were instituted, and the rate came down to 7.4. The last disaggregation of the CSO numbers, the underlying or the core inflation stood at 4.5%. This is an inflation which was cleaned of the impact of food prices. We did have, in a three-month horizon, well, perhaps a little longer than that, certainly some key increases in food, local food prices in food and in foodstuffs, which did cause, and when I say local food prices, I'm talking about locally produced foods. We did have a substantial increase in the rate of inflation. Since that time, there has been some mitigation of domestic prices, and there have been other influences in terms of the increases in prices that we've seen. Certainly the increase in prices that we have seen with regard to certain basic staples that are on the world market, certainly corn, certainly wheat, certainly soybean, certainly rice. And that has a new implication as well. One of the longer term issues has been in the area of dairy products, where the decade of the 90s, 80s, where we had, if you want, a dairy overhang of what was known as the Euro crisis in food. In fact, they had too much of it. That has been large measure removed by the redesignation and the change in the European, the way the European Union has expanded its budget.
Now, besides the our inflation rate being compounded by you know, substantial increases in international food prices. What are some of the other causes for the high for our inflation rate?
Well, I think in large measure the numbers that have been seen or have been shown has been that well, again, it's going back to it. I mean, you're looking at food prices had an inflation rate of over 20%, and that is not uncommon. I want to say that is an experience which has been had over several countries. This is not unusual at this stage, precisely because of the numbers that we've talked about. There have been other stresses and strains in the economy. We've also had a fairly high degree of liquidity in the local economy, and perhaps that has led to inflation coming from the monetary side.
We are definitely going to deal with that issue about the liquidity, but I see you nodding your head, Senator King. Senator King, sorry. Yes.
Yes. The minister is obviously correct. Food prices have gone way out of control. But I don't agree that they're 24% across the world. We have got a much higher rate, inflation rate, in food than other countries. But I would like to look at the Trinidad and Tobago economy versus, say, the U.S. economy, and possibly look at one of the reasons why, if we go behind the structures of the two economies, we may see why we do have such an inflation rate. We are an oil exporting country, and we've been going through a period of high sustained oil prices, and therefore our exchange rate should automatically be appreciating. Now, the United States economy is an oil importing economy, and under sustained high oil prices, their balance of trade has been deteriorating, and therefore their dollar is naturally depreciating. So we have not studied this situation, because if we were really trying to ensure that Trinidad and Tobago benefits from its oil money and that the population benefit from its oil money in a more satisfactory manner, we would really be looking at that peg. Should we be pegged to a dollar which is depreciating and we're actually importing high prices because of that very fact? So that is one issue. The other issue is that what causes high oil prices is the high liquidity in the market. And we do have large earnings of US dollars, which we are almost 100% translating into TT dollars and spending it on non-productive sectors. So therefore, we have high liquidity in the country. We are spending it on things which are non-tradable, and therefore we have too much money chasing too few goods, and therefore we are in a position where there is such high liquidity in the system that those traders will take advantage of it and will put their prices at what the market can bear. So we have to control that inflation by the liquidity situation as well.
Let's listen to what the governor of the central bank, Ewood William, had to say on Monday.
We need to reduce the growth of public expenditure. And here I'm talking about central government and quasi-public spending. To complicate this challenge, this may need to be done even in the face of increasing demands for income transfers to the poor to deal with rising food prices and agricultural support programs.
Now, here we have the governor of the central bank saying that we need to curb spending. Now, here our finance minister, Karen Eunice Ishara, in a report, dismissed claims that government's spending pace, government's rapid pace of development remains the primary cause for this country spiraling inflation. And we have Minister Colum Imbert saying, it would be impossible to have an urgent reduction in government spending since development of roads, healthcare, education, and security systems are necessary to make Trinidad and Tobago a developed country. You're speaking about high liquidity, and the government, the governor of the central bank is speaking about curbing government spending, but here it is we have two government ministers, Minister of Finance and the Minister of Works and Transport, saying that, you know, they need, you know, we disagree with that and we can't do that at this time. Minister Brown, does your government have different economic views or perspectives or ideas than the governor of the central bank?
Well, I don't know how to answer that. First of all, the central bank is an independent organization. It is not a creature of the Ministry of Finance, or it is a creature of the government. It has an independent role, and its independent role is to maintain a certain level of balance in terms of the growth of money supply aggregates, and to maintain the, if you want, the stability and health of the financial system. That is also the objective of the government. So we have a complementary objective. The manner in which we do it, of course, requires a certain degree of interplay between the two parties. And it, in a sense, in such a fashion, does not compromise the independence. But by definition, in as much as we are dealing with a large monetary aggregate, there is need for some complementarity of the policies between the Ministry of Finance as well as the on the monetary side from the central bank. With respect to the increase in supply, in money supply, I think the answer to that is pretty certain, pretty clear. I think there have been large transfer or income transfers between sectors, certainly not done by the subsidy route. And I think that there certainly has been behavior, and I think the governor, I can't remember the exact words he used, did suggest that there was an attempt to increase prices. In other words, that there is behavior which suggests that in as much as there is an opportunity and demand is outstripping supply, we will increase prices on the part of the private sector. That's factual, that's there. So we have to have a number of behaviors which would mitigate against that increase.
But why would the governor be saying you need to curb the spending and you have two ministers, one of which is the Minister of Finance, saying we can't do that, or we're not going to do that? I mean, how do we deal with this situation?
Well, there's a dichotomy, and there's a clear dichotomy. Once projects are underway and in position, and there's a clear demand for the development of the economy and making certain transfers. And when I say transfers, I don't mean transfer payments. I mean making certain sort of development expenditure. You have to create some capacity in the economy, and the economy must demonstrate the capacity to respond. In the first instance, that can be done in several ways. By imports, in the first instance, there's a loss of foreign exchange, or alternatively, there's capacity creation in the domestic economy. And that's the opportunity. In other words, inflation also does give a price incentive in terms of what needs to be developed. What you want to do is to ensure that that signal does not at the same time devalue the real growth in the economy. So there needs to be a sense of balance. There are projects underway. There are demands for certain sorts of improvements in the infrastructure of the country. That is there. Now, having started those expenditures, it's pretty difficult to say that you're not going to do it. A rapid rail project, certainly what it will require is certain if phasing of the expenditures in perhaps in a much more coordinated fashion that may have taken place in the past. For example, there is a need, given the development of the economy, to have your electricity supply at a certain level. Now, that is not something that is going to be directly produced from the economy. You do have to import a certain level of equipment. But we have also taken a decision a long time ago that ensures that part of our gas resources is used towards the generation of electricity, which is one of the reasons why our manufacturing sector is particularly strong. Its underlying cost of energy is substantially cheaper than that which exists elsewhere in the economy.
Mrs. King, you would like to respond to that?
Well, I mean, to say that we are passing on our benefits to the public through electricity, and to say, on the other hand, that we're going to remove the subsidy on gas, what are we doing? We're also subsubsidizing water and all of those.
We are subsidizing water,
yes.
And we are subsidizing, in large measure, the current prices in the fashion in which the pricing of water is considered. It really reflects a large subsidy. Water, at the moment, is priced out of house rates. On the basis of house rates. The house rates that exist in the country, the land and building taxes, in fact, an act which was passed in 1920. And the rates such as they are, in fact, relate to a period which is approximately 80 years old. In other words, those rates have in large measure not been touched, so that we are subsidizing water to the extent to which that we are pricing it inefficiently. But in the meantime, there is certainly an increase in the demand for water, and certainly in terms of how the water is done, and it requires some expenditure to improve both the distribution and the method of how we win water, and that is not something that can be postponed. Certainly it will have to be phased. There is a clear cry where people are saying that the distribution of water and or the winning of water is inadequate, and that is something that must be treated
with. Minister, it's been inadequate for the last 20-25 years. This government is not just now into power. This should have been done. As a matter of fact, the infrastructural development which has now taken place in this period since last year, water and roads and whatever, and electricity, that should have been phase one. Those would have been going into aspects of development which would have brought about improvements in productive capacity and the opportunities for more productivity. But in our first 5 years, what did we spend the money on? The high-rise buildings, Taruba Stadium, where is it? It's not finished.
Well, Taruba Stadium is certainly not a factor that is to be considered in relation to the development of water.
We're talking about spending.
Taruba, is it in the last 3 years?
We're talking about spending.
That does not fit into what we are talking about.
We're talking about spending of money on non-productive assets. Our first 5 years should have been focused on spending that money on infrastructure which would improve the capability for farmers, for everybody to get more involved and in restructuring of our economy, even up to today, which is 6-7 years after this government has come back into power. We have done nothing that is going towards restructuring of our economy away from oil and gas. And I would like the minister to tell me, what will we be exporting in 10 years, given that we are at peak oil? Oil is declining, gas is declining. What will we be exporting, because we will not have oil and gas? And if we're not doing that kind of restructuring, then we are wasting time and we are not doing anything for development of this society.
Well, thank you very much. We both agree that the economy needs to be restructured. It needs to be restructured in the long term. I think the government has said very clearly that one of the critical areas that we need to be restructured in is the development of services, and that services need to be a fundamental part of that improvement. We've also talked about development of the services sector, and particularly the financial services sector, and providing ourselves a gateway between ourselves and Latin America. That is one particular area that the government has placed an identity on. But to go back to your comment about the development of WASA and not making funds available for the distribution, first of all, it takes some time to develop the plans and also to deal with the issues. When I was a commissioner of WASA, and this is under the NAR administration, it was very clear that a number of studies which were required to be undertaken. In fact, WASA at that stage did spend quite substantial sums on developing a GIS system to look at the infrastructure of Trinidad and Tobago. That was done. That cost quite a significant bit of money. But the necessary other infrastructure expenditures which were required were not possible at the time given the size of the bill. It is now possible, given the fact that we now have additional resources, to be able to make those payments or to make that expenditure at this point in time. It would have been useful if we had made it earlier. It would have been very good if we had had the funds to do so. We didn't. We do now. So that expenditure has to take place at this time. With regard to the transformation of an economy, it is very clear, having regard to all that was done between the early 60s in the first five-year plan, the second five-year plan, the third five-year plan, which was meant to be ended in 1979, a number of initiatives were undertaken to diversify the economy. And there has been a substantial diversification. It really goes to show that diversification is very much of a long-term effort, and it requires time.
Okay, well, we definitely have to take a short break for our 1 p.m. news. Welcome back to Marathon Fridays on I-95.5. We have in studio this afternoon Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Senator Mariana Brown, and former Senator, Mrs. Mary.
Thank you.
Yes, we wanted to deal a little with the productive capacity, as Mrs. King was talking about, but now, this is a statement by the Minister of legal affairs. Peter Taylor, he says, apart from a long-term strategy of significantly increasing the amount of land for agriculture production, he said that government's first mega farm project at Shagaramus was expected to mark its first produce by November.
Right. Just on the point of agriculture, I would like to know that in the grand scheme of things, and given all the factors that have been mentioned that are contributing to inflation, where does the lack of investment that we've been hearing so much about factor into it? How can you gauge the impact of that on our current situation, both Minister Brown and Mrs. King?
You mean lack of investment in agriculture?
Yes, well, or meaningful investment rather, because we've been hearing for a number of years about the plans to introduce these mega farms, for instance. So we're talking about things that people have been proposing over the past, well, decades, I imagine. Farmers have been saying that they've been putting these things forward for decades and they have not been taken seriously. And it's something that we hear a lot about in the media now, that it's because of a lack of investment, it's consistent neglect of that sector, that we find ourselves that we're in the position that we're in today.
Well, misdirected. I mean, the largest element of agriculture, and in fact the agricultural numbers show a decline. And they show a decline primarily because agriculture, it has been, in terms of numbers, has been largely denominated by the monies that were spent on Karani Limited. And essentially, Karani Limited has closed. And what we are left with is some statistical numbers that need some cleaning. I'll give you an example. We show, CSO, for example, collects statistics and indicates that we have self-employed people standing to approximately 8,000 people. That number does not include the following. It doesn't include masons. It doesn't include carpenters. It doesn't include taxi drivers. It doesn't include double spenders. And large measures also misses out on number of people involved in the agricultural sector. So perhaps the number that we reflect there is an undervalue. That's one. It also undervalues a significant amount of non-commercial production, which is done by households. That's two. So probably the level of number, or the figure that is shown for agricultural production is understated. Also, too, traditionally, if we go back to the numbers, certainly into the 60s and 70s, much of our agriculture is for export agriculture. Sugar is an export. Cocoa is an export. Citrus, in large measure, up until the 70s, was also an export, as was coffee. We now have a new developing export. It's a small number, but it's the export of cut flowers. What we're talking about in terms of changing the shape of agricultural production is making a greater match between the use of our land resources for domestic food agriculture. In that regard, yes, there's been conversations about the creation of mega farms. There has been a request for proposal with respect to the creation of approximately 13 farms, which are going to be larger than 100 acres. One of our difficulties is that the proposals that have come in have been particularly weak. Many of the people who have bid have showed that they have lacked the capacity to and or experience in doing some of the things that we've wanted to. On the other side, to counterbalance that, there has been, as part of the industrial settlement for Karani, the intent and the agreement to distribute 7,250 two-acre plots to farmers. And there was an attempt to match the farmers, what the farmers' requirements were, with the land types that existed. Of that, we expect to offer approximately 5,000 leases by the 30th of June, and thereafter, I think, ending somewhere around the 30th of March 2009, that exercise should be completed. At the moment, 2,000 leases have been offered, and we have approximately 1,000 farmers in production.
Mrs. King?
Yeah. I'm listening with great interest to the minister. I mean, when we were planning the closure of Karani, I think surely that was the time when we should have from then been starting to develop the small farms and the large farms. We've only heard about the large farms recently because we have a crisis in food production.
Well, the large farms were also part of that plan from two years ago.
I sat and listened for the information, so I'd like to comment on the information, if you don't mind. When you say that we have already begun to transform the economy, if you look at every sector of our economy, you will see that it has been in decline over the last 10 years. and that we are still dominated by the energy sector, agriculture is non-existent. Our manufacturing sector is in decline. So in what way have we actually had some transformation of the structure of our economy? I would like you to tell us, because it's not visible to anyone who is studying the economics of Trinidad and Tobago.
But I would have thought that somebody from your background and your capacity would have understood the diversification.
I'm asking you, where have we diversified?
We certainly have diversified substantially away from oil. Oil is now very much of
Don't confuse oil with energy, Minister.
I'm not confusing oil.
Come on.
You said oil resources.
Has been in decline. Resources,
I'm saying
yes.
that oil has been in decline. That's perfectly
and
true.
And gas has been in decline, that
is
too.
No, that's not true. That is not true.
Minister,
the numbers certainly do not indicate that gas has been in decline.
We're talking transformation, huh?
I am agreeing with you. Right. And we have to take it in a long-term context. Transformation does not take place in 20 years. It does not.
I beg to differ.
We have done so considerably. We've changed from being an oil exporter.
Why are we still declining in manufacturing?
We have changed from an oil exporting country to certainly being an exporter of derivatives out of gas. That is a significant difference.
Minister, you're joking.
That is a significant difference.
It's still concentrated in the energy sector.
Well, that represents our strength.
Good.
And
I think what
Mrs. King is referring to is the diversification away from energy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the diversification away from energy is a matter of private sector involvement. The private sector has to step up to the plate. In another sense, we have to also recognize that there's been a significant increase in the volume and value of exports that have taken place in our manufacturing sector.
So that has also taken place. So is government creating the environment for the private sector to step up?
I am pretty certain that all of the changes that have been put into position since 1981 certainly have impacted very clearly on our manufacturing sector. If we look around elsewhere in the Caribbean, nobody is in manufacturing. None. Of the total trade that exists in the intra-Caribbean region, Trinidad and Tobago accounts for approximately 94% of all trade.
I'd just like to pull us back for a moment to agriculture. How do you feel about subsidization, Minister Brown?
I think it has been clearly articulated, and I think Madam King will agree with me on this one, that the subsidies and the subsidy regime, which was instituted during the decade of the 70s and 80s, did not work.
Okay, so do you think there is any other possible form of government subsidization that can help our agriculture sector?
Well, we do have it already.
In what sense?
We do have it.
Apart from the distribution of the lands.
Certainly we have it in the form of lands, and certainly we have a whole number of incentives from a tax perspective which exists. There are approximately 10 pages of them.
Can you just tell us a few?
Well, just let me get it. Tax concessions for agriculture. Income tax relief on all approved agricultural holdings, income and corporation tax relief, VAT exemptions on vehicles, exemption of motor vehicle tax, VAT exemption on all approved machinery and equipment, custom duty exemptions on all livestock and poultry imported for breeding purposes, customs duty relief on transportation crates used in poultry industries, duty-free concession on all existing items as set out in the CET, 50% write-off of all new corporate investments in agriculture. I could give you the specifics with regard to...
Do you see the provision of access roads as a form of a subsidy?
The provision of access roads is a form of...
And is this part of your subsidy?
Yes,
that
is part of the public sector investment program.
But you know, Minister and the hosts here, when Cuba had to restructure its agricultural sector after the Russian pullout and so on, Cuba went into small farms. And Cuba realized that the population didn't want to go back to the land as such, and therefore Cuba had to make the decision that it had to look at the whole structure of wages, and it ensured that agricultural workers were paid more than workers who worked in offices, so that they could get the population back to farming at a realistic income so that they could live and afford to feed their families and so on and get their children to school. We really have to be looking at the structure of our wages, because all the incentives that are given by taxes cannot work if they're still working at subsidized levels and that the prices of the product is not supported by certain subsidies that the government must put in place to ensure that they earn an income that they can live off.
And Cuba is not the only country that we can look to for an example.
That is correct.
An example.
But Cuba had to restructure its whole society, and that was how, that's only 40 years ago, and that is how it did it, and very successfully. Cuba's agricultural production now is 90% of what it used to be before the Russian pullout. When Russia left, their GDP fell by 85%. They have now recovered totally and have gone beyond in certain sectors.
And I have a burning question with respect to how we treat agriculture versus how developed countries treat agriculture and their subsidies, the subsidies they provide for certain areas of agriculture anyway. Why is it that we feel the need to provide subsidies in the form of tax relief, as opposed to, like Mrs. King is proposing, that we see in models elsewhere,
increase wages.
Why do we feel uncomfortable with that suggestion?
Well, I hardly think that you'd want to use Cuba as the example in terms of what Trinidad should do in terms of its agriculture.
Well, we're inviting Cuba to help us with large farms. Come on, Minister, be real.
But hasn't it worked, though? Shouldn't we assess as being...
To use the large farm as a demonstration farm to use the agricultural techniques which we have not used and not followed.
But
Cuba has learned certain lessons from a technical perspective that we need to use.
I want to make the point that
our economic model is not a socialist one.
No, but this
so
is
by definition, we will not legislate prices for agricultural wages.
We
have set a minimum wage. No. A minimum wage that operates across the economy.
You have to be innovative,
what you are suggesting
Minister.
Just because you incorporate socialist more than innovative, does it? Yes,
how exactly are
going to tell farmers then to increase the price of price that they are paying towards agricultural labor? Please tell me.
Well, I think based on the information that farmers give,
what is the government supposed to do in that regard? Please tell me.
And I think this is where government subsidization also comes in. Not so you allocate a certain amount of money toward that sector, and the money could take the form. The money can be distributed in that for that purpose.
Minister,
to subsidize wages,
that
why can't it be?
Is an entirely fungible methodology.
Fungible.
Yes.
Minister, we are supporting URP and CPEP. Is that socialist?
We need to accept the fact
that at 4.5% we are at full employment, and that there will be a need to restructure those programs.
That is not full employment.
That is perfectly true.
Yes, but one second, Minister.
That is exactly the decision that has been made.
The Minister doesn't want anybody to speak. Is it not true
that the URP is getting into agriculture?
Yes, there have been some instances in which CPEP has been involved in agriculture.
No, I'm speaking about the URP.
I am not certain about URP. I can tell you about CPEP. I know about CPEP. I do not know about URP.
Okay, on the issue of setting a proper environment for our agriculture sector, we had some farmers here. It could have been about 2 weeks ago, and the research officer, Mr. Norris Dionarine, we spoke about the issue of predial larceny. What is your government doing about predial larceny where agriculture is concerned? This is like a plague.
Yes, I think there have been many complaints with regard to predial larceny, and I think that is something that needs to be looked at. I am not in a position to say what the Ministry of National Security is doing with regard to predial larceny. I suspect that we have had our hands full with a number of other issues, and we have not tackled predial larceny as part of a national security threat. I understand the point that you're making, but I'm not in a position to answer that question.
Let's listen to this clip that we have here. It's from Mr. David Abdullah.
Yes, it's too late now, and so we're now going to have the horrendous fallout of more inflation and many other deleterious effects, both in terms of the macroeconomy, in terms of our sense of ownership, in terms of regional integration. Yes, it is too late. That the whole issue of governance, the whole way in which a country's economy and politics is being managed, is totally horrendous. And we're not saying the opposition is better. We think they're equally hopeless. Karen Share is now saying, yes, inflation is a major worry. 3 years ago, we started warning about food prices. 3 years ago, if the government had acted, we would not now be feeling the impact of high food prices so nearly to the extent that which we're doing.
Well, that was political economist and trade unionist Mr. David Abdullah. We are very sorry that the minister had to leave right away. Well, of course, we want to thank the minister very much for the time that he spent with us this afternoon. But in that clip there that David was, you know, just speaking about the economy, he said that the economy is in a mess.
Well, I think I wouldn't use the word mess. I would say that we have not really diversified to the extent where we could be in a better balanced position as far as the imports of food is concerned. I would say the agricultural sector is certainly in a mess. That is why I asked the minister, when the closure of Karani was brought to Parliament, and some of us who were there at that time, asked specifically that please let us be serious about the allocation of land. You cannot not have development of land planned, at least for the Karani acreage, which is a huge amount of land. And we understand today that lots of land in Karani has been allocated to housing. And that some of the lands have been allocated to agriculture. But it has taken such a long time to get these 7,000 farms. The minister said 7,250 farms. Somebody 2 days ago said 7,700 farms. But it's certainly it's over 7,000 farms. And I think when they want to implement something fast track, it gets done. So why didn't we do this with Karani if we were serious about food? Anyone who has studied the economy and peak oil and the oil price and what is going to happen to food prices as well as other costs. I mean, tourism is going to be affected because it is costing a lot more to fly planes. Airlines are merging to try and bring down costs. So there's lots of areas where we don't seem to have wakened up and understood what is happening across the world, and we have not taken advantage of the information that is available to us, and the speed of implementation of the development of the Karani land is just something that I can't understand, because when we want to fast track, the Prime Minister told us yesterday that we built a house for him and a diplomatic center with the Chinese doing it in 8 months. 8 months, ladies and gentlemen, 8 months. You know, we heard all of this. But why didn't we get some kind of speed on the development of Karani and the Karani lands for agriculture? And why don't we have a serious policy on what are we going to do in order to ensure that we do have some? We can't feed ourselves. That is impossible. But we certainly can have certain basic foodstuffs grown that we can be more comfortable than we are at the moment as far as inflation of food goes.
Well, good afternoon again. And we do have political economists, Mr. David Abdullah, on the phone. Good afternoon, Mr. Abdullah.
Good afternoon, guys, and to your other colleagues in the station and to the listeners.
Thank you very much for joining us, David. I'm very sorry that we didn't really get you, you know, while the minister was here.
Yes, well, I saw him this morning, you know, when we were doing our media conference on the right now promenade opposite the Twin Towers. He actually passed by, but I was speaking to the media at the time, so he waved, but I couldn't engage him at that moment. I was looking forward to engaging him, actually, because, quite frankly, and I think I agree with Mary, good afternoon, Mary.
Afternoon, David.
That, you know, the government really is quite hopeless. That's basically our position. We have drawn the line with them in terms of what has been happening, because take the food prices issue. We've been talking about this thing and raising the issue for 3 years. Now, 3 years is a long time in terms of being able to implement policies to turn around agriculture. I agree with Mary that, you know, the government had its priorities, so the Hayat went up, all those buildings downtown policy went up, the Prime Minister's House and Diplomatic Center went up, and nothing is happening with agriculture. The county land thing was a total fiasco, and we warned them that the divestment secretariat was not the right agency of the government to address the issue of Karani. Should have been the Ministry of Agriculture. And nobody else. They had at one time four different ministries dealing with Karani transformation. Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Trade, and one other. It was just pure madness. And the government, therefore, was not serious about high food prices. Now that the situation is reaching very serious crisis proportions, they are now trying to act.
Should we expect to see any change, though, in the attitude or approach to agriculture at this point? Even in this crisis situation?
I don't think so, Adine. I mean, that statement by Peter Taylor, Minister Taylor, the other night, was no different from what the Prime Minister said at the end of the food crisis consultation in August, or what he said in the budget speech at the end of August. So, you know, where is the action? There are promises made to set up a pre-larsen squad by the Prime Minister at the food crisis consultation. He repeated the promise in the budget speech. He said it will be set up by the end of first quarter 08. We're now at the end of April 08, and there's no pre-larsen squad. Now farmers are just saying, well, what's the point of us engaging in agriculture for somebody else to steal our produce or to steal our animals, and so on. We may as well get out. Issue of leases, issue of dairy farmers, the price of milk has not increased. We met to the Minister of Agriculture in January and said to him, it's impossible for dairy farmers to live when they've had a 15 cents per litre increase in the last 15 years. The price of feed has gone up, the price of labour, everything has gone up, and a 15 cents increase. And the Minister said, okay, we'll look into it. That's January, we're now at the end of April, nothing has happened. So, no, I don't believe there's a change of attitude.
David, I remember you and Fight and your organization speaking about the merger between RBTT Financial Holding and the Royal Bank of Canada, and here it is reported that the governor was saying that some $8 billion in cash is going to be injected into a system that is already, that has a high liquidity. I mean, what does that spell for our economy?
Well, more inflation, and that's one of the reasons why we argued against. We argued on many grounds, and that was one of the economic reasons why we argued against the sale of RBTT to Royal Bank of Canada. We said that at $8 billion coming into the economy at one moment, because everybody's going to get a check at the same time, but there's no place to absorb that money. And so what is going to happen is the government is going to try to establish a set of treasury bonds, hoping to mop up some of that money. But $8 billion is not easy to mop up. And that is going to create more inflation, and we're already double digits. So, there's no serious macroeconomic management of the economy. We're not saving enough. Peter Taylor has talked about, we're consuming. Consumers must change how they behave and not consume so much. But the government is sending the signals with respect to lack of saving and the way in which they're spending for people to spend money and to consume. So you can't be engaging in an exhortation to citizens to save more and not consume so much, while you as government are setting the example of the opposite.
And what about the issue of the EPA? How would that, you think, factor into what we're experiencing at the moment?
Well,
when that eventually comes on stream, that is.
Yeah, it's not going to impact for another couple of years, but the point is that the EPA is part of the general philosophical or ideological position of the government, which essentially is a neoliberal model, a free market model. Listen to Mariano Brown, listen to Peter Taylor, listen to other government ministers. Their position is all, we are for free market policies. If food prices rise, that's free market economy.
And so that is the fundamental problem we're dealing with. Is it the framework in which we operate?
Yes, it is the policy set, and this is why we said we have to draw the line. Who are opposed to free market policies have to stand on one side, and others who are for the free market policies have to stand on the other, because at the root of the problem, the economic problem, is the policy set. We talk about free market, but in Canada, it's not a totally free market, because in terms of Royal Bank of Canada, they cannot be bought out by any foreign bank.
Mm-hmm.
So the Canadians protect their banks, even in a so-called free market economy. The United States, the Federal Reserve Bank, is intervening in the market every day by injecting funds to save and prop up the financial system with the subprime mortgage and so on. They're not going to allow us to fall in that economy, so they intervene. And I'm sure they're going to intervene in terms of, well, in fact, I'm going to put the other way around. It is precisely the Bush's government policies with respect to biofuels that has been a major contributing factor to the spiraling price of food and the shortages of certain kinds of food like grains and so on.
Let me just interject 1 second here, David, and bring in Mrs. King here. Now, the Minister of Finance, she blames indiscriminate levels of consumerism as a substantial part of inflation. I would like a final from you, Mrs. King. I mean, can consumerism be controlled by government in any way, and you know, by policy, by strategy, and how can it be done?
Well, consumerism results from the fact that we have such high liquidity in the system, and that.
Sorry about that.
We have a lot of money in the system, and therefore the money will go towards buying what people think that they need. They don't really need it, but they're going to buy it. But my concern with the whole structure of what is happening now in government spending, because government spending is creating the liquidity. We're not saving enough in the Revenue Stabilization Fund. We are almost cashing everything that we earn except what goes into the Revenue Stabilization Fund. And the projects that the government is developing are projects which are to satisfy the political elite. It is not to satisfy the demands or the needs of the population. And therefore, these large amounts of cash which are in our system have got to be transferred first into capital and from capital into wealth-creating capacity. We're not doing that. We're spending money on non-productive assets. I've said this over and over and over. And Mr. Mariano Brown doesn't seem to understand that the things that the money's been spent on are non-productive. He's telling me we've transformed the economy when we know we haven't transformed any economy. Nothing has been transformed but the political elite. They're the people whose projects are being...